starting recording. It hasn't started yet. I'm just waiting for the button when it, you know, the counter when the seconds start counting.
Yes.
I'll tell you when it's okay. It's recording. But you're well apart from that, I'm sure.
I'm.
Sorry, messing up the timings. Oh yeah, I'm going back to Oxford to work for Carfax. I've actually got a salary position. Meeting your favourite person.
Very good. Well, we don't talk about favourite.
Lovely, but yeah, offering me a miserable salary.
I'm sorry.
Here we are. Okay. Greetings, respective viewers. I'm here with Professor Tim Wilson. So he's a YouTuber extraordinaire, the star of The Circle, that reality TV show in 2019, a cartoonist, artist, writer. What else should I say? Multi-talented man of dazzling talent. All right. So we're going to interview Professor Tim Wilson. So I've got a number of questions for you. Anything else you'd like to say about yourself by way of introduction?
I think finally my love of innuendo has got the better of me, and I'm following in the footsteps of Anne Widdecombe.
Oh yes. Wow. Okay.
Anto, but I don't share her political.
I realise, and she went back into politics. And was a Brexit MEP for a few years, you may know, yes?
Well, I do know of this, but now she's a doyen of Talk TV and GB News. She literally goes from station to station giving the same opinion in both stations.
I would like to be on that. Can you get me onto that?
I can't get. They asked me. I went along for a. For a thing and a little pilot, and then I just thought it seemed a bit grimy, and I can't work out when I think back to it which one it was. I don't know whether it was Talk TV or GB News, but you know, I will talk to anybody.
You'll talk to anybody. Okay, goodness, you're not going to go on what it is, Dancing with the Stars like Anne Widdecombe did, are you?
No, I'm not. No, I probably would. If they asked me to do that, I would consider it. But I remember I was on one occasion I went to a theatre thing, and there were photographers and everything there, and a red carpet and all that stuff. And I secreted myself at the bar, and all these people, professionals from Dancing on Ice. I don't skate, and oh, that doesn't matter. We'd teach you. And I said, I'd scream. And they said, great teeth.
Well,
and I thought, well, you know, for a haemophiliac, I don't think Dancing on Ice is really my thing.
Drama is conflict. They want things to go wrong. I mean, you probably know I was a star of Romanian reality TV many moons ago. Yes.
Do we should trade reality TV disaster stories. But yours wasn't as alarming as mine, I think.
No, it wasn't, but it was going back to my flat to find a woman I'd never seen before in my life, didn't tell me who it was going to be, and having to share that with her for a week. Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, right. So, question number one, how do you manage to be such an extraordinarily successful YouTuber?
Well, I don't think I am. I'm just tenacious, as you may know. Our paths have crossed professionally, so we, you know, I think I'm very good at self-discipline.
And right.
So I set myself the task of making X number of videos a day, and I do that. But the YouTube algorithm is comprehensible, and there was a Russian fellow I was speaking to today who was trying to explain it all. There was a point, although I'm really interested, and although I'm really eager to learn more, my eyes are drifting off, and I'm lost because I don't understand it. And so if I'm successful at all, it's by accident, not. But I would like to be better.
You're too self-effacing, but you did that one, How to Write an Essay, that got 5 million hits. That was fantastic.
No one knows how to write an essay, so. I plugged a gap, and what's interesting is I think it's still being used. And I mean, I've thought occasionally I should go back and tidy it up, but it's so difficult to do that. And I've I've done a few follow-up things which haven't had that sort of traction, but I am planning to do some other things based on English.
Right. Okay. What else was I going to say about based on English? Yeah. Okay. So that's about YouTube channel. I mean, okay. It's frequency of posting. Maybe good visuals. You got a good camera, good microphone.
I've got a good microphone, but every so often it stops in the middle of a video, and then people say, "Oh, you got to watch your microphone. Got to watch your microphone." And I only see it on the comment section because I don't play back my videos after I've made them. I think they're out there, they're gone. And I don't sit, I've got too many things to do to sit sort of onanistically looking at my own videos. Unless somebody tells me there's something wrong with them, I just assume they're okay.
The thing is, I watch my own videos because nobody else does.
You look at your own videos?
Yeah, sometimes a little bit.
George, I'm shocked. I never look at mine. I just assume they're there, gone.
Right, like a hound returning to its vomit. Yes.
Slurp.
That is how the late unlamented J. Enoch Pohl of unhappy and inglorious memory described keeping a journal. But anyway, so frequency of posting,
and I can't think of even my attempts to keep a diary. I've never reread the rubbish, and most of the time I can't read my writing after I've written. I just assume writing something down is a way of committing it to my memory, and then I put the piece of the paper in a particular place, and I know if I really need them again, I can find that place. Everything comes back. That's my memory loci thing.
Mm. Well, often I want to sort of redo it or change it around a bit or blah blah blah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. I think that's an indulgence. I think you just do it. Get it out there. It's a record. It's a moment in time.
You think of James Joyce drafting and redrafting, only published about 5 novels, but they're seen as magnificent, as just epoch-making.
Magnificent and unreadable, George. Magnificent and unreadable.
Well, some of them are. All right. Finnegan's Wake is.
Ulysses. You just cannot plough through that. I've got about 3 copies.
Or in fairness, I've never actually read it. I do want to be in Dublin on Bloomsday once. I was in Bucharest on Bloomsday, and they had a reading from Ulysses there, in Romanian there. All right, so
your Romanian is good, isn't it?
Yes, not as good as it was, because I left that country, my God, 12 years ago, so I got very little chance to practice it. But yeah. You know, it's there deep down. You know, they say you never really forget. It's like writing about it needs to be reawakened.
Right, George. The other day I was talking to somebody from Russia, and I met them in a shop, and I thought I can talk to you, and I suddenly realised I couldn't think of anything to say, and I tried opening my mouth, and all that came out was a bit of Greek. It was like a
Yeah, I've had that when I was in Latin America trying to speak Spanish, and so rather than saying "e" for "and" saying "unt" because I was used to speaking German or whatever. If I try to speak Spanish now, I accidentally speak Italian. It used to be the other way around.
We have a default foreign language, don't we? So we know we're not speaking English, and what comes out is our default foreign language. Mine is Greek.
Mm-hmm. Goodness, I didn't know you said Greek. Because you spent a few years in Greece, no?
I spent about 10 years in Greece. And I had quite a I had quite a dramatic time there, and I remember a Greek friend telling me when I had a real blarney with them in a Greek bank, and I said, just don't try winning an argument. Don't try having an argument in Greek. You will never win. They will always get the better of you. And I thought, you're quite right. If I want to get really angry, I just go into English. You know. But I did learn how to argue in Greek, and I think that's the big decider. Can you get angry in a foreign language?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, that's what, if you want to hear someone's real, real accent, make that person lose the cool. People.
My accent. I did have a wonderful. So you know about our issue with torture, I think, and all this business with my partner was a Greece by the Greek Coast Guard. And we took the case through the European Court of Human Rights, which is one reason why I'm so passionate about migration. And and at one point I telephoned the Greek Coast Guard to try and get some information. And I spoke in Greek, and for some reason they assumed I was part of the defense team. And they sang like canaries. And I explained this to one of my friends, and they said, oh, well, that's because you have a Peloponnesian accent. You don't sound as if you're from Athens. Because I learnt my modern Greek as a goat herder on the steps of the Taygetos Mountains.
And my word.
And so I really have quite a local sounding apparently.
Well, I have been called goatish, but not linguistically.
Well, I looked after 100 goats on a mountainside. They were extremely pungent. And when I came back to the
UK,
people moved away from me in the tube.
I don't like their cheese. I'm not sure if they must have eaten goat meat at some point, but I thought they'd largely look after themselves. They're not so sure-footed, these goats.
They do look after themselves. It was a wonderful job.
Wow, okay.
But they did expect me to milk the goats as well, which is quite difficult. You have to pull the udders between the back legs and aim the milk at your pail far enough away so that other things don't drop into the milk at the same time.
My word, there's no machinery to do that like for cows.
Well, there might be, but you know, 100 goats, you don't have a machine. You have
Wow. All right. Next question. What was it like being on that TV show, The Circle?
Well, being on the show was lovely. I loved it. I think they didn't realise I was quite comfortable with cameras. I'd done a lot of filming in Greece. I'd made films. I'd been a director and a designer of films for quite a long time. And I'm an animator, so I'm very interested in how things move. But I hadn't performed for a long time, so I was a little bit anxious about that. But I loved being on. Yeah, I loved the time alone with my cat.
Mm-hmm.
But I hated the process afterwards. I don't know what it was like in Romania, but in Britain, the reality TV approach is to use a sort of torture primer technique called R21 technique, where you remove time, where you remove control of temperature, where you have constant direction. Where even your meals or your loo time is controlled.
You were in a house with how many people?
Well, I was in a house on my own. I was in a flat on my own, and I could engage with other people through a television screen, through a social media construct. And so,
for how long?
For a month. So some of the people I was talking to didn't exist, or weren't who they say they were. And as a teacher, you know, you have a sense of who is a girl, who is a boy, who is real, who is not real. You just have this innate sense, don't you? You know, when you see an essay, you know that it's being cribbed from somewhere else. You may not know exactly where it's being.
Well, no, I had this because there was this 11-year-old and she had the lowest literacy age in the school, right? And then she starts writing like a professor.
Yes.
And then she reused the word diocesan. So I said, what does it mean?
Yes.
You don't know what it means. You used it correctly here. Okay, spell it. Spell it.
Oh, no. You're very cool. You're very
the
cool.
Trouble is,
I would just drop the word into conversation. And just...
Because some of them honestly think that is research, copy-paste, saying, yes, you can find info, you can use individual, there's no copyright on facts or whatever or words, but no, you can't take whole sentences and pass off as your own, you know?
I'm pretty certain when I was at university, I took whole sentences and passed them off as my own. It was where you put the quotation marks, which mattered.
Well, it is attribution, that's fine, but don't pretend somebody else's verbal construction is your own. You've got to do at least a little bit of paraphrasing. And that's, I've never studied intellectual property law, but I always wonder, how much do you have to change it before it's no longer plagiarism?
So the circle... I'm a dreadful mimic, George. Do you know this?
I don't think I do, actually.
No. Well, I once had accommodation when I was at Oxford in the Catholic chaplaincy. Do you know that place?
I do know it is. Yes.
Hmm. And at the time, the Catholic chaplain was a man called Father Walter Drum, and he was a slightly portly man. And I'd come home. I'd come back to Oxford early because I'd had a bit of a thing with my father, and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and I thought, oh my God, maybe it's my father, so I have to disguise my voice. I said, hello, Father Walter Drum, and the person on the other end said, oh, How strange, he's here too. And I put the phone down very quickly. And when he arrived, he didn't question me. I was the only person around. I have no idea. Anyway, yeah, but go on.
Okay, I see. Goodness. But didn't it drive you nuts being locked at that house?
No, I enjoyed it. I mean, I was a monk at one point, so I was quite
I didn't know that. Tell.
I was a monk before I went to Oxford. I was a monk.
Really, where?
Down in Surrey, where all the best monasteries are.
So what was the monastery called?
Well, it was technically, I suppose, it wasn't monastic, but it was contemplative, or it tried to be contemplative. It was Rosminian.
Roswinian?
Rosminian.
Rosminian, never heard of them, okay.
Antonio Rosmini Sabato, who was a 19th century Italian priest who was about to become a cardinal, and then he fell foul of the Risorgimento. And everything went dreadfully wrong.
So you were a monk for how long?
About 18 months, I think.
My word. So you went into that straight from school, did you?
No, I went to university first. I went to St Andrews first, and then applied to Oxford. I was accepted, and the master of my college died and hadn't kept a record, so I couldn't go. And I thought, oh God, what am I going to do? So I became a monk.
So, but you graduated from St Andrews first of all?
No, I just did a year in St Andrews, and then I became a monk, and then I reapplied to Oxford, and I
had no idea. So, but you,
I got thrown out of my monastery for applying to Oxford without their permission, and they were very clear about that. If you can go to Cambridge next year, with our permission, with our approval, or you can go to Oxford. I thought Cambridge, not in hell. Now I think Cambridge is the most wonderful place. I think Cambridge is like Oxford used to be.
Wow, okay. So that there you are as a monk. I mean, because being cut off from society really doesn't seem you.
But it's lovely. Most of my days I sit at my office desk, which is very small. I'm in a sort of very small utility room with the cat. I don't know whether you can see, but the cat is over there. This is the extent of my space. My space is very small. And I don't speak, unless I'm speaking.
Wow.
That's it. I'm very happy with silence. Is a
I thought you were a chatterbox, okay.
Only when I'm forced into it.
All right.
Like the nun who's taken a vow of silence. The moment you let her out, it's and today is my talking day. That's a song from the musical version of Falmouth.
Didn't know that.
Falmouth.
By the way, are we going to come to your acting later? I've got the conversational patter of a machine gun after coffee. But anyway, coming on to number three, explain how the media company mistreated you after you're on the circle.
Well, it was very much after. I'm pleased you know about that. It's that manipulation. So having got control over my life for a month, they just continued that control, and it's very difficult. I don't think it's their fault, they just didn't know what else to do.
But you weren't paid to be on the circle, or were you?
No, I was given subsistence, which is about £70 a day.
Oh, okay, but I thought the idea was that the media opportunities would follow.
Well, that is certainly what I was told. So I was rung up on a very wet, rainy day in Cambridge, and I was headhunted, and I had about a week, 2 weeks to make a decision about whether or not I would do it. I was told not to talk to anybody, so I couldn't get decent advice. I didn't get a contract until I think the day before I went in the show, and even then that contract was just extraordinary. It was there to intimidate potential agents, I think, rather than to stand up in court, and the level of manipulation just continued, and some of it was really nasty. I couldn't go back to my university. I couldn't do work for the BBC. Somebody wanted to give me an agent. I couldn't do that. They just stopped everything, and they kept me engaged with a potential show that I discovered had already been filmed in the US anyway.
Oh my goodness. Okay, but was it not boring in that house? Because you couldn't read or write or anything, could you?
I could read. I read. I read not Dombey and Son. I read a Dickens.
Could you not go out?
We could be taken up to a roof garden, but we had to go up muffed like Princess Leia and blindfolded and guided by well, these hands. I did enjoy the journey being guided by somebody else's hands.
Wasn't it a bit like prison?
Probably, but my experience of prison is quite limited. Do you have an experience of prison?
I didn't know this.
You don't have an experience of prison?
No, I don't, curiously.
My only experience of prison is in Albania, and that was very brief because I went in the wrong direction. I was expecting to go in the direction of Yugoslavia, and I went into Albania, and long story. Anyway, I was rescued by a very nice Albanian man.
Put me How on. Long were you locked up for there?
Well, it seemed to me like months, but I suspect it was more than about days, more like 2 hours. But it was quite a shock to the system.
My word. Okay. So anyway, you were involved in the United Kingdom Independence Party for a while. You were going to be a parliamentary candidate. Tell. Well,
I was a parliamentary candidate.
You were. You stood.
Andrea Leadsom. Yeah, absolutely.
In which year?
I 2016 or something.
Right.
I'd run up against her once or twice over student visas, which I felt were a foul thing. So, you know, as a student, you start your student career. Let's say you come to the UK to study GCSEs, and suddenly you're just starting your A-levels, and then all your student visa has to be renegotiated.
What a pain in the neck. Because
it happens regularly, and then people are thrown out of the country because they're trying to manage their own accounts. And it doesn't matter. If you apply for a student visa on, let's say, a Monday, your application will not be considered to have started until it's opened by the people in the Home Office. So if you may have if you have the right amount of money in your bank account on the Monday, it doesn't matter. By in 2 weeks' time, you have to have the right amount of money in your bank account. And by that point, of course, you may not have done your direct debit, may have gone out or whatever.
I mean, this is what's insane. I'm someone who would want to quite reduce immigration quite a lot. But I do think with student visas, we need a sensible, slick, efficient system because they're bringing money into the country, for goodness sake. And they're not immigrants, so don't count them in the immigration statistics.
100% behind that. But the problem is that it's much easier to count them in the immigration statistics, particularly if you can throw some of them out because they're inevitably going to come back. And it looks like you've had some immigration success, doesn't it? If your whole Home Office agenda is based on some sort of target, the students are an easy target because they're fully documented, unlike waifs and strays who are hidden in the black economy.
So, but by the way, but you never actually believed in UKIP's ideology, did you?
I did believe in some of it. Yeah, I don't. I never believed in leaving Europe.
But that's the core of it. That's what it's all about, no?
Not the core of it. No, the core of it was about taking control and being being independent. Now that I felt one could do within Europe or outside Europe. I understood the arguments about leaving Europe. They weren't that significant at the time. I also felt that Europe was seriously wrong. I still feel Europe is seriously wrong. I've lived in Europe. You've lived in Europe. I knew how
yes.
bad Europe treated.
So which constituency did you stand in?
Northampton South, I think.
And what percentage of the vote did you score?
I pulled out. I pulled out in the early days of the general election because I'd reached out to I thought what can somebody with a degree in theology do with a sort of national focus like this? I thought, well, I can see if it's possible to devise a sort of pan-Islamic council, probably get King Charles as Prince Charles to be some sort of patron, and so I started writing to as many Muslim councillors and MPs and lords as I possibly could, and I fell into the orbit of Humza Yousaf, who's now the First Minister.
And
Humza Yousaf was on a television, on a radio program with a man called George Coburn, who was a UKIP MEP, the only UKIP MEP for Scotland. He walks around in a kilt. He's rather a funny man. But anyway, he was at the recording, and Humza was late, and the And the interviewer said, I wonder if you know where your friend is? And Coben says, Humza Yousaf, or as I like to call him, Abu Hamza.
Mm-hmm. And did you consider that rather racialist?
I considered it outrageous. And Humza said, what are we going to do? And I said, well, I'll resign. And he said, let's go big. And I thought that was a terribly good idea. I ended up on the front page of the Daily Mail. And
what?
In the BBC, I did a sort of green screen spat with Mr. Farage, who said, "Why, it's just a joke." And I said, "You can't toss these things off as just a joke with a pint of beer." And I was mindful that maybe I was using rather colourful vocabulary.
Are there good people in UKIP?
Oh, fundamentally yes, but the top echelons, which is what I was able to identify. So my idea was that if UKIP could be dissuaded from leaving Europe, which I thought wasn't even on the cards, then maybe I should take it over. But and otherwise, if it really was racist, then I could expose it. It was racist, I exposed it. And the higher echelons of UKIP were made up of people from the the English Defence League, and they're all people with no hair.
Another question. Tell us about your professorship in Russia.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was a sort of accident. I was teaching in Russia anyway, and I was asked if I would teach in a university, and I thought that was terribly flattering. And they wanted me to teach in a university which was connected to education. So I was teaching teachers how to teach. And suddenly I found myself running the department. And
wow.
It was only right towards the end of that time, in 2019, just before I did the reality TV show, I was invited to move from one chair to another, and I was shown my new chair of theology, which would have been lovely, and I was really looking forward to that.
Sorry, when you say chair, you mean professorship. You don't mean literally the chair.
When they talk about the chair, that means an entire office with secretary and all these other exciting things. So I was trading one secretary for another, and one room for another, and then I did the circle and couldn't go back.
Oh.
So yes, I started off in the as a professor of. I'm not sure whether I'm professor of English or professor of. I think I was the professor of some sort of primary education.
But you've been warned not to go back to Russia, isn't that correct?
Yes.
Why?
Because I was outed on the circle.
As gay.
Yes, and Putin has quite nasty laws, and also I'd met one of the main Duma players, and quite a lot of the bigwigs. And this man is a man called Pyotr Tolstoy, and he was a foul man. He looked like a toad. I mean, he hadn't quite got all the pustules, but I suppose he'd grow into his personality in time. Now, speaker of the Duma.
Something else I'd like to ask you. Okay, tell us about your acting experience.
When I left university, while I was at university, I did a lot of. When I left, I thought I would go into the theatre, and I sort of juggled theatre and education and film work, mostly illustration and animation, and then somehow I found myself moving further towards directing and designing and.
You're a man of many parts.
When I came back from Greece, I thought, you know, I can't really do theatre. It's just too intense. And so 20 years on, having done the circle, I thought, well, actually now is the time for theatre. And in the past, I was always cast as somebody evil, and I did a lot of Greek films. And I was always just sort of getting my head chopped off and stuff, doing these horror films. And you know, this is a very important book. Every page is smeared with blood. And so it's rather nice to have come back and to find I'm sort of genial and sort of Father Christmassy and do nice things. So at Christmas, I was playing the old man in Dickens.
I saw.
And did you see it?
Yes, I was there in the theatre.
Did you see it?
Yes, I told you. I went to Epsom.
I don't remember you coming.
Yeah, but unfortunately we couldn't meet because you were going to... I could meet at the stage door, but I had to hurry home for something else. But anyway, will you be treading the boards at the Panto this coming Christmas?
I don't know. At the moment, it doesn't look as if I am going to. Let's talk about me doing a sort of polar experience. I don't know, is the answer. And also, I've got some animation projects.
Well, I sincerely hope you do. Anyway, Tim, we must meet in person. We've not met in person for absolutely years. It's shocking. This is something before COVID. But anyway.
We met on the street.
We met by arrangement. Oh, no, was it early 2020 when there was a slight easing of lockdown or something?
Oh, no. Lockdown was at its worst.
Early 21 or late 20?
I was attending a little one of those things where you stick.
That rally. Yes, that protest in Parliament Square. It's like September 2020. That was it. It's 3 years ago. My God. OK, well, Stephen, not Stephen. What am I calling you, Stephen? I was thinking about King Stephen. Well, Professor Wilson, may I say, it's been most illuminating to speak to you as always.
Well, so I hope that I've answered all your questions, but there we are.
I think you have, actually. All right. Let's say cheerio. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.